Welcome everyone, my name is Hans Franke. I'm a forester with the Alaska Division of Forestry. Our office is in Soldotna. We cover the Kenai Peninsula here and the Kodiak chain of islands. That's kind of my area of responsibility for the state. And late last summer, kind of did a similar little informative session like this on the spruce ape. But there were quite a few folks here at that session or not, or yes or no, some yes, some no. So maybe what I'll do is not cover some of the things that are covered in that presentation. I still have that slideshow, and maybe if we go over, I can show that. That goes a little more into the life cycle of the aphid and kind of what's going on. And if we don't touch on all of that, just let me know, and I can review some of that for you this afternoon. But my intent this afternoon is to kind of cover, when we had left off last summer, we had done insect and disease flight transects, which the U.S. Forest Service and State of Alaska does jointly to determine where insects and pathogens are impacting forests in the state. And so now, we have that information. A lot of that's not new to those of us in here that live in the forest here, but we'll, look at some maps there. And then we've got some information as far as where spruce aphid was found here in the southern Kenai, like late last October. And then we'll go from there. So, kind of last summer where we left it off, not knowing where we were trending into for temperature for the winter. Those of us that were here all winter know that we had would probably be considered a more normal winter. And that certainly has significantly impacted the aphid population. And so this, surveys that were done by the Division of Forestry and U.S. Forest Service last week on several of the trees here up and down the Sterling Highway and in Homer here, there were no live aphids found. So, that bodes well certainly for I think we're past a steep decline, but that would be what would be predicted with colder temperatures. So,
did you check a few spots in Homer or just one spot in Homer?
Like two or three spots in Homer, and then top of Diamond Ridge, going up towards Eckerd Point, essentially. So, I'll go through.
Did you say you didn't find it?
Correct. Yeah, no live aphids. Yeah. Spruce aphids. There might be some aphids on your tomatoes or something like that later this summer. But I'll go through the maps. If you have any questions as we go along, just feel free to interject. And I've only got like half a dozen slides. And then a lot of what I'll talk about today will just be tree health, general tree health, how to improve the health of your tree now that it's been impacted by aphids and kind of what to expect for, short-term and long-term tree health. So this is what the data from last flights revealed. This is not news to anyone in here, but it kind of shows you this has been the traditional range of spruce aphid in Alaska, southeast Alaska, northern southeast in particular. It's been on Montague Island for a few years, and last 2 years it's kind of been the first time it's made the leap to the Kenai. And that includes, and you can see there, the outer Gulf Coast, parts of Resurrection Bay, and K Bay here. So I'll show you a few other slides. There's a little interpretation that goes with these slides. These slides are done from aircraft. The mapping there is done from aircraft, and so they may not be the most the most pinpointed, but it's good for generalizations. Here's a little closer look. So what we see here is spruce aphid, and most folks here would recognize this. Pretty much from Seldovia to the head of the bay, you can see impacts from spruce aphid. In Homer here, well, my next slide will kind of show you, in Homer here, up Diamond Ridge some, and then, out east end road here.
Is that just surveyed area, or that, like, that other places? It's not.
Yeah, that's an aerial survey. So that's basically flying in a fixed wing airplane, looking down at the forest, and, trying to correlate what you're seeing on the airplane to what you know to be present on the landscape, so that may be, there's a degree of ground checking that has to go into that to kind of, quantify how accurate that is. This actually shows that maybe this isn't quite that accurate, right? So last summer at this time, these are spots on the ground that were surveyed and a couple of spots on East End Road were surveyed not to have found insects, aphids. And you can see this is May. I have these two handouts. And this is October of the same year, last year. So by October, you know, 3 months after I was here, aphids were found, you know, just south of the Nilchik, pretty much all the way to the end of East End Road there. So this is what the bulk of the discussion will do today. It will be about, you know, now that we've had aphids here for a couple of years, we've seen a drastic decline in the aphid population. You know, as tree owners, landowners, and homeowners, what can you do to improve the health of your tree? We know that from trees that were, just want to make sure I get the years right here. So we started seeing aphids in the winter of 14 and the winter of 15, and those trees that were impacted in 14, we saw, right, get new green shoots in 15, and we're anticipating that to be the same here in 16. What's been seen in southeast Alaska is, you know, not widespread mortality from spruce aphids, but reduced growth. The aphids prefer to eat the older needles of the tree, and those older needles are on the interior of the tree branches. So those the aphids have a hard time with the high nitrogen foods, and so those needles on the inside of the tree have less soluble nitrogen, so they prefer those, and they have a hard time or can't survive on that new flushed growth. So that's why last summer you saw trees here that had been impacted by aphids the previous year flush out that new green leader on the end, and that would be the anticipation for this upcoming summer as well. So you know, even though the trees look like parts of them are dead, or maybe the whole tree is dead, it's prudent to certainly wait, you know, for a few months and see to what degree that tree re-leafs out with a new leader. Are there any questions kind of about that now? Go ahead.
Thinking that they photosynthesize with the remaining healthy needles, and that they have so few, do you think it's they can make it even with?
I think they can.
You do?
I do. I think it'll vary by tree, you know. It would be, I can't stand up here and tell you that no trees will die, right? But I think that, you know, there certainly are some older or over-mature trees here. You know, if we talk about Homertown proper that were maybe sprayed during the spruce beetle epidemic or somehow escaped the spruce beetle. But, you know, a lot of the trees you see around town here are young, you know, for a tree standpoint, and fairly vigorous, you know, what we consider as a forester full crown, which means, you know, limbs to near the ground, so a lot of crown ratio, which is a sign of a healthy tree. So I tried to do some, find some information about this today, and I didn't have much success regarding the ability of Sitka spruce to photosynthesize through their bark. A lot of trees can. But I don't know the ability of Sitka spruce, so it wouldn't surprise me if they can somewhat, to some degree. It's not uncommon for some deciduous trees or even like a Scotch pines to photosynthesize through the bark during the springtime, like right now, until they leaf out and then you know, start to photosynthesize through their leaves.
Some had suggested limbing them. The dead branches would help what's alive still, or what do you think?
The question was revolved around limbing the branches, and that may help. I guess I don't know that that would help tree health now. You know, in general, a good rule of thumb is limb in months with an R in them. So we're in one. But what that's going to do, not so much for aphids, but that's going to reduce the number of pathogens that are out there floating around in spore form, etc., that may find a host on that freshly cut branch. So if you do choose to do limbing, I would probably do it the next few weeks here, or wait and see what kind of leaves, what kind of comes back. So go ahead.
So a lot of these spruce trees have lost needles on the inner,
you bet,
sections.
Yeah.
What chance of having that re-needle in that area there? Are we going to see this growth
Yeah, you'll see
on the outside of the tree.
Correct. You'll see it on the outside of the tree.
You're not going to see any needle regrowth on the inside. They won't be sprouting there.
You may see, depending. I mean, different spruce trees have a pretty low ability. Some trees can, what they call epicormic branching, which is basically branching. And so, you know, that some of that may occur, but it'll be kind of an outside, you know, a.
We're going to have hollowed out trees.
Yeah, essentially.
Going forward.
The caveat to that is, you know, in 4 or 5 years, right, you may have a foot and a half or 2 feet of green on the outside of that tree. So I can't tell you, you know, how it's going to look. But maybe I'll run through these quick, and then we'll take some more questions. So probably the number one thing you can do to help your tree survive is watering. I know that's tough in Homer with water availability here. But that's really beneficial to the trees. Most trees, spruce trees, as folks in here know, are shallow rooted. But most trees have about 80% of their roots within a foot and a half of the surface of the ground. So, frequent watering, especially in this springtime period right now, what trees are doing. I know there's some plant experts in the crowd here, so if I'm wrong, correct me. But right now, what the spruce trees are doing is they're storing starches in their roots, sugars and starches in their roots. And what those sugars and starches are going to do, it's going to create it's going to allow the ability for that tree to draw up water, right? Just like when you brine your salmon, right? You have salmon that are watery and you have a salty or sugary solution. So they're starting to uptake that water as soon as the ground thaws, and providing that for them in this kind of drier time of the year, the May and June time here, is important to do. And something, the simplest thing here to do, which folks that garden would know, is combine that watering with some mulching to retain that water, you know, essentially trying to replicate that kind of forested condition for that tree. And mulching doesn't have to be wood mulch chips that you see at the store in a plastic bag. Mulching can be, decayed leaves. It can be decayed manure. It can be decayed straw. It can be kind of anything that's, going to help retain that moisture near the base of the tree.
Does all the needles that fell off count?
The needles do count. They're there isn't a lot of. There isn't a high amount of nutrients in conifer needles. You know, deciduous trees have more nutrient load. But, you know, that would help. That would help retain that moisture there, right? So, and then also the simplest thing you can do is, if you want to provide some nutrients to that tree, is maybe add some compost to that mulch, or a layer of compost on the ground, and then some mulch over that to provide some nutrients to that tree. This isn't for, just so we're clear, you know, this is, if you have a few prize trees in your yard, like a forester would, that they like look at every day and go out and talk to. But this isn't for if you have 10 acres of trees impacted by aphids. So, and then, you know, kind of the last on the list, which is effective. You know, nature has its own way of taking care of things, but, you know, like a dilute fertilizer solution, you know, a few times during the growing season. And that can be a fertilizer of your choice. I've got a few handouts up here. One of them is from the University of Minnesota Extension on how to fertilize conifer trees. So, you know, that may be of interest for some of you. And I guess what I'd ask too is, I also have my cards up here. And if you do try a few things and find success, just let me know for future kind of educational purposes. But
what about easy wood stove ash?
That would be fine. You know, fertilizer there, certainly. I don't know about, like, salt content to dried seaweed. I don't know a lot about that. That would be the one thing I'd think about there. But,
Can you be a little more specific about watering?
Sure.
Am I taking out a few 5-gallon buckets for each tree? Am I running 300 yards of hose?
Yeah.
For an hour?
That's a good question. It's a question that's hard to answer, right? But I can try. And so, you know, obviously size of the tree is dependent. And, you know, what I would recommend is size of the tree is important. And then, just in general, you know, it's important to water more frequently rather than more volume of water, right? So, you know, I would think you know, if you watered for May and June, till kind of, you know, those typical 4th of July rains start showing up, if you watered for, you know, twice a week and saturated the soil, you know, underneath the, around the trunk, and maybe the drip line of your tree, or a few trees, you know, that's what I would do. There are, maybe I'll just address if there's any more kind of tree care question. And if there aren't, that's okay. There are a couple of insecticides that we talked about last year. You know, I'm not sure how relevant they are now, but if anyone wants information about those, I can discuss either of those. With you. One's a trade name's Monterey. It's a soil drench technique, which you place on the soil, and it's uptaken by the tree and kills the aphids. Another's called Pointer, which is actually injected by, you inject into the tree, and they both kill the aphids. Both of those insecticides kill aphids. So,
what's the effect on the critters that eat the aphids, like birds and other bugs?
As far as the insecticides go?
Honeybees?
Yeah, I can't answer that specifically. I know both of them are registered, both of them are sold over the counter. They're non-restricted, so.
Doesn't mean much.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we have over 1 million honeybees in Homer.
Sure.
I just ask people to be really cautious when you start using products from the store. Neonicotinoids, pesticides, and insecticides will kill the bees. The injected into the trees that the tree doctors talked about last year will kill the honeybees because they go up in there and they get the sap out of the trees and they take it in the hive, therefore infecting the whole hive and killing the bees. So let's keep our bees in mind too. And the other question I had for you is, you talked about citrus spruce. What about Colorado green and blue spruce? Because I have 8 of those.
Yeah, you bet. Colorado blue spruce will be a host as well. Yeah, so I know in the lower 48, it's been, to my knowledge, independent of species, you know, and that would be white spruce or Colorado blue spruce, Engelmann spruce. So I can kind of review the life cycle, or if that's of interest to folks, kind of how this happened essentially, right? And so, spruce aphids been around in the lower 48 since the late 1920s, 1928, I believe, and it's been in southeast Alaska since the mid-70s, specifically near Petersburg. And so it's always kind of stayed at what we consider endemic levels there. You know, it's impacted some trees, had a few warm winter cycles, killed the needles on some trees and kind of subsided, similar to what's happened here. And with the series of, you know, how it was vectored to kind of the mainland of Alaska here, you know, now it's been found on, or confirmed on, Raspberry Island, which is near Kodiak Island as well. You know, it is unknown, essentially. But what those of you that are gardeners know, what aphids have are all females and produce live young. And so with the series of warm winters, typically reproduction and feeding happens, would be kind of winding up now, February, March, and April. And with those warm winters, you know, not having much of an impact on the population, that population can grow exponentially very, very quickly. And so that's essentially, you know, how we ended up here, is a cycle of a couple of warm winters. So, you know, as land managers, landowners, as a natural resource agency, it'll be, now that we know that this spruce aphid is here, it'll be important to kind of keep an eye on these cycled weather patterns. And when we see a warm winter lining up, you know that we'll be needing to deal with spruce aphids.
Just to clarify, have you done tests this spring to see and you didn't find any aphids this spring?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So the winter killed them.
Correct. Yeah. Found a lot of aphids, but they were all dead.
Did they lay any eggs that would survive?
No, live young. Yep. So, you know, when I, obviously some survived, right? I mean, there'll be some level of spruce aphid here, but, you know, we won't see the impact. You know, you may see a portion of a branch, you know, against their whole trees. Should go ahead.
The ladybugs that have been available in town here.
You bet.
They're Chinese ladybugs. Do we know anything about?
I don't.
You know, sometimes bringing in other
insects. As far as a biotic control, you know, I don't. I know. You know, there's birds. You know, there's several other insects. Clarid beetle is a predator similar to that will eat aphids, but I have not heard of anything of, you know, discussion of any sort of biocontrols for that. So another question, so. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we had in our property, a lot of dead looking, very highly affected trees, and then we'd have, every once in a while, we'd have a tree that wasn't affected, it was hardly affected at all.
Sure.
What is that a particular kind of spruce? I mean, cause I think we have both white and sitka, and perhaps the Lutz.
Sure.
Is that?
I can, you know, in Homer here primarily, it's Lutz and Sitka spruce, mostly Sitka spruce here.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, you know, there's some trees that seem that appear to be totally not impacted, you know, by aphids. Why is that? And, you know, there could be a number of factors with that, you know, and that's not uncommon with, you know, seen during spruce beetle or other insect outbreaks. And, you know, it could be simply the DNA of the tree. It could be the tree has more resistance, you know, it could be that. It could be the site of the tree. Most of these insects, aphids to some degree, you know, especially things like bark beetles, you know, they don't have a lot of tolerance for being exposed, you know, so direct sunlight might desiccate them and kill them, or wind, you know, may make it harder for them. So it is interesting, you know, how, but I'm not sure if there's any real, you know, hard, yeah.
So in my neighborhood, there's a tree we call Grandmother Tree.
Sure.
And somebody bought that lot to protect Grandmother Tree. It's a huge tree, and I'm weeping because she looks so affected. And
sure.
She stands by herself. So if we all watered and mulched it, and or is she gone?
Yep, you know, there's unless you can tell a tree is, you know, pretty typical signs of a dead tree, you know, sloughing bark, a lot of wood pecker activity, that kind of thing, I would be hesitant to remove any trees right now. You know, there's just not much of a point. You know, the trees that we have, you know, I know it seems like a lot, but in the grand scheme of thing, it doesn't pose much of a fire hazard. The trees are still green, you know, so they don't pose much of a safety hazard as far as falling over. And so, yeah, you know, I would certainly recommend doing one or all of these things, you know, doing some watering, you know, some mulching. You want to keep that water at the base of the tree, and potentially some, you know, other fertilizing compost or fertilizer. But trees at the end of their natural lifespan will be, you know, will have a harder time, you know, and you saw that last summer here, right? You saw what I saw is some of the larger, taller trees with shorter green new growth on them.
And lots of cones at the end.
Yeah.
Like they want to put out what they can before
sure.
they go.
The cones are a tough indicator, but, you know, they sometimes stress trees can put on a stronger cone crop. The cone crop in these trees takes 2 years to mature, so they'd have to be good planters.
Okay, that makes sense.
But, you know, typically you see the cone, what I've seen is the cone crop, I mean, every 3 or 4 years you'll see a pretty strong cone crop. So that's a good, it's actually a good segue. I also have a handout on how to grow spruce from seed, if anyone's interested here. You know, the worksheet there kind of lays out how to do it in a pretty organized fashion, but you know, folks that are familiar here will know in these good cone years, if you have bare soil, you're going to get some spruce seedlings in there. So,
well, and I also wonder, there's a bunch of bluff erosion that one could actually drive to in Kasilof, where the whole mass of, like, it's a big tree, but big trees with their whole root balls are just laying on the beach. So are those transplantable, was one of my questions. Those big trees that, I mean, It would take five people to lift the root ball.
Yeah, probably pretty tough. You know, in an urban in an urban setting, you know, or like in cities, they can transplant some fairly large trees with some kind of, you know, advanced
heavy equipment.
Yeah, and some advanced, you know, real strict root care, you know, for that. But, you know, something that's been exposed to the salt water there, pretty harsh environment, I'd probably say, you know, spruce in general have a pretty low tolerance for salt intrusion, right? So, probably not.
Might be still above the tide line.
Yeah, maybe there would be a chance there.
I don't.
Yeah.
So I was told that if like 50% of your tree is affected,
sure,
by spruce acres, that it's probably not going to make it, and you might want to consider taking it down.
Yeah.
Is that what you are saying? I don't think I'm hearing you say that.
No, yeah. I'm saying don't cut your tree down at all. Just to be clear. Don't
even if it's completely brown and
yeah,
skeleton.
Yeah. Even if your tree doesn't have a shred of green on it, just hang out. Just give your tree a chance. Give it a chance. So, yeah. So even if your tree is completely doesn't have a needle on it, think about doing these things to your tree. Just to be perfectly clear. So, and you know you can test for the viability of a tree. You know, all it takes. Say your tree doesn't have much or many green shoots this year, and all it takes is a simple to check and see if that phloem is active under the bark of the tree. You know, is a little pocket knife or a little hatchet, and you can tell if that phloem, you know, if it's sticky and sappy and wet underneath there, your tree is doing its thing. It might be doing it slowly, but it's alive. Good question.
I have a loose spruce that was really attacked by the aphids, and then just absolutely the trunk is solid sap. Mm. Now, what caused the sap to just score out of the
way? It's a little bit deal.
So, you know, it's not aphids. That's the good news. You know, the bad news is you may have some other agent in there. You know, that's so right now, you know, this is, we have a lot of weakened trees here. So it wouldn't be unusual to see, you know, a little spruce bark beetle activity, right? You know, killing a few of these trees. Or there's a few others, you know, Ips beetle is another. There's a handful of kind of bark beetles that, you know, you may find finishing off a few of these trees that are, you know, may not make it.
So the sap, does that mean it's trying to heal? Like, it's just like I thought more pine cones meant it's trying to reproduce.
Sure. You know, it may in certain instances mean it's trying to heal. You know, sap can be used to expel wood-boring insects, right? You know, when they bore in sap, the natural, you know, response for trees that push that out with sap. So, you know, trees don't heal in the sense that we do. But trees include their wounds, so they will, you know, basically grow over a wound.
Interesting.
We obviously, kind of around the rim of the bay, we have a lot of inventory of aphid-affected spruce. I'm curious about any experience or a few modeling that's been done that gives a reliable predictability of fire behavior. We have a lot of steep slopes, mild to steep slopes, and the spruce with interiors with dead needles on them are standing a lot.
Sure. You know, we don't have a reliable, you know, fire behavior model for, you know, what's recently occurred to the spruce aphids as far as its availability to burn and wildfire. In my experience, you know, I think the biggest impact will not be the spruce, but you know, there may be some more light transmission, which may grow some more grass, you know, where we've had some more of these patches of spruce when we have this time of year, right? Those refuges of spruce are typically not harmed in these light flashy fuels, these fires in you know, involving the grass fuel type. So, you know, I think for the most part it'll be if there's some sort of a, you know, whether where there is mortality in the spruce, if there's some sort of a conversion to a more grass filling in where some of that was shaded in the past due to the needles of the tree. Does that kind of make sense?
With that in mind, would you prescribe removing, just like normal, removing fuel ladder on the lower levels?
You could. You know, you could if you had needles that were red and hanging down. You know, most of those really flammable fuels could be just probably be removed by whacking it with a shovel handle and having those needles fall to the ground, you know, and rake them up this time of year. But, you know, the interesting thing with this, as opposed to the spruce beetle, you know, with spruce beetle, you'll see more of a prolonged reddening, right, of the tree. And because these aphids, they actually suck the needles, you see those needles get yellow and fall off in 4 or 5 months. And so, you know, I don't anticipate the kind of red-needled, prolonged red needle stage that you might find with a bark beetle killing the tree. As far as the availability for fire goes, you know, my biggest recommendation would just be, you know, make sure the defensible space around your home is maintained. And I don't have any information on that, but you can certainly reach out to me through my contact information here. But if you have any questions about that, but that's a maintenance issue, you know, that has to go on year round, and you know, sometimes it's forgotten or in the spring, which is important. Anything else?
So I guess what I'm hearing is we had a good cold winter last year, which helped us. But with the increasing warmer winters that we're theoretically going to experience more, we're still not out of the woods yet.
Sure.
And our trees may be subject to spruce aphids, maybe not as heavily this year, but maybe next year if we have an increasingly warmer winter. So meanwhile, we do that. But are there any trees that are immune that we could plant? I mean, is there a pine? Is it?
Sure. So just in summary, you're absolutely correct, right? You know, spruce aphid is here, and we'll be dealing with it, you know, for as long as we're here. So, you know, we may baby our trees here with these techniques, and for 10 years we grow some needles, and, you know, the spruce, we may have a series of kind of warmer winters again, and those needles may be impacted. So, you know, we have seen success with Siberian larch. You see that around town here. You see that pretty frequently. Lodgepole pine, you see that one around. You know, birch isn't a bad one. And, you know, there's several other ornamentals that you see here. You'll see mountain ash, things like that. You know, the circle of tolerance, you know, is pretty small, you know, at these latitudes. So, you know, I guess those, off the top of my head, those would be my recommendations, or maybe a few other things that you could give a whirl. But several of the other ones are, you know, spruce. So in a landscape setting, it's certainly a great idea to have some variety, you know, on your
property. Scotch pine?
Scotch pine would be a viable candidate.
What about Western hemlock?
Western hemlock, that may grow here, you know.
What kind of pine was it that was brought in to mitigate the bark?
Most of the pine you see planted in Clam Gulch in the central Kenai Peninsula, lodgepole pine.
Lodgepole?
Yeah.
Because those grow really well here.
They do. What we've seen with the lodgepole, kind of tracking those, is they grow real well initially, you know, to 20, low 20s, mid 20s feet, and then the Sitka spruce actually catch them. Mm-hmm. But for a landscape setting, they're certainly a nice tree, and they provide nice visual barrier for wildlife cover.
Is there any plan or thought about having those little plugs available to mitigate this aphid?
You know, I'd say give me a call. There are a couple different avenues to get seedlings, and I don't have any information with me right now, but I can let you know. I also have a handout here on kind of mulching, tree mulching, so.
Are there insects that are bothering the birch?
In Anchorage, there's.
Yeah, there's a, this is another cyclical thing you see as well, and we saw it a few years ago here at the Alder, but there's a birch leaf roller that you'll see pretty commonly. You know, I haven't seen that widespread here on the Kenai Peninsula as widespread as we did on the Alder here on the Kenai Peninsula, but, you know, that may be what you've seen in recent years, and that literally rolls up the leaves of the birch. Anything else? Go ahead.
Are you anticipating an increase in soil acidification of all the spruce?
I don't think it, not in the grand scheme of things, I don't think. You know, that is the negative about spruce needles, obviously, is they're pretty acidic. You know, along, I'll just kind of segue off that question, you know, something that is important, especially urban trees, is, you know, one is water, and two is, you know, oxygen to those roots. So if you do have a case where, you know, you have something on top of, you know, this would go for the moisture too, right? If you, like a boat parked on top of your tree, on top of the roots of your tree, that wouldn't impact the oxygen, obviously, but that may impact the watering. So, you know, be mindful of kind of how you're treating the base of your tree during these springtime conditions for the water, and then, you know, any sort of paving activity or covering up the base of that tree could have negative health impacts for that tree.
One more temperature question.
Sure.
So I was also told that we needed 10 days of 10 degrees or colder to kill off these spruce acres. Is that true?
The question was that we need 10 days of 10 degrees or colder to kill off the aphids. And all the information that I've found and that's been passed along to me from entomologists is that, you know, we don't know the bottom of the cold threshold. A lot of the research is European research that's been done, and most of that says, you know, below freezing is good. You know, below 32 degrees is really good. And then several of the studies say, you know, below the low teen range, 12, 13, 14 degrees is really good. So it doesn't go into how many days of that, you know, but certainly this winter we had, you know, days in Homer here where it was actually, you know, zero or colder. So, you know, that's good. And cold, those insects, typically these warmer winters have been feeding in that mid-February to March, so cold later, when they're in that feeding stage, you know, is more apt to have a larger impact on the population. I think if that's it, more or less, I can hang around if there's more specific questions, and you're more than welcome to take what handouts you want. Take one of my cards. If you have any success with any of the tree improvement techniques, let me know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, go ahead.